We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart. Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a clipping from the free ads of the Western Gazette, read by Brian Perkins. Hopeful mid-30s lady, single mum, seeking real gentleman who knows how to treat a lady with a moustache. Thanks to Joanna Bailey of Bristol for that. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome, first on my right, Linda Smith and Clive Anderson. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Roy Hattersley. Linda, whose hospital stay fully tested his immune system?
General Pinochet, a dictator, retired. Well, though he still potters, I believe. If you give up when you retire, it all goes, doesn't it? And he's been here in England having an operation on his back. Not quite sure why he couldn't have it back in Chile, where he comes from, I suppose. A bit dangerous for him, that, really, because, you know, the surgeon could turn out to be someone he's tortured. Yes, best thing for a bad back, electrodes to the genitals. Surely you're saying, oh, he's got diplomatic immunity. I don't know why he should have diplomatic immunity. I doubt if he's ever handed round the Ferrero Rocher in his life.
As a lawyer, I think he's going to get out of it because extradition has to be done very, very properly. You've got to stick within the law, and it's clearly a honey trap that they set up Margaret Thatcher to attract him to Britain. and that must be cheating.
It's like the story about the Mrs. Thatcher passing the homeless man in the street with a sign saying Falklands veteran, and she says, oh, how wonderful, how marvellous, I must give you £10, which she does, and he looks up and says, oh, muchas gracias, señora. When the hospital staff asked the general if he minded having a drip in, he said no, William Hague could visit whenever he liked. 2 points to Linda. Clive, who's holding steady on the northeastern front?
This is Eddie George, the governor of the Bank of England, who foolishly and without any sort of competence blurted out the truth that the... which is always a sackable offence in politics, is that by keeping interest rates at their current level, the idea is to get rid of inflation in the southeast of England, but that will get rid of a lot of jobs in the north of England. And asked if that was a fair price to pay, he said, yes.
Also demonstrates a staggering ignorance of geography, since he was talking about British Leyland, who are closing down in the West Midlands unless we're careful. The idea that Burma is in the northeast of England, it disturbed me that this is a belief of the governor of the Bank of England.
It's northeast of the Mansion House, or...
North of Watford, yeah, is north, it popular, north, of Watford. North of Watford.
Why is he called Eddie George?
When that's his got... name.
No. Well, yes, I suspected it might be his name, but why this friendly Eddie, not Edward?
Eddie's posh, isn't it?
Is it?
It couldn't be Ed, Governor of the Bank of England, would it? Eddie's posh. You like Freddie, which is posh, and Fred, which is vulgar.
Tony Blair is posh, but Tone...
Tone.
Scylla Black. That's probably a bad example, isn't it, then?
Bad appointment as a governor of the Bank of England,
I think,
though.
So.
But, oh, I don't know.
No,
I don't
know.
Which of these three interest rates would you like to go along with? Fred, that is my best impression of Scylla Black.
2 points to Clive. Roy, whose careless talk cost her husband votes?
Alan's told me something called Norma, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a grand opera. But it also may be the wife of an ex-prime minister. And she was overheard by a Labour apparatchik who discovered she was saying there was a problem about pensions. And the Labour Party's machine, being so stupendously effective as it is, it's my view that Pinochet came across to recruit some of them for his return to power, but that's not true. The Labour machine, being as effective as it is, translated this into the discovery that the Conservative government was going to demolish the health service.
So you're saying that Norma Major then sort of brought down the Conservative government?
Amongst others. I mean, to be fair, her husband helped a bit.
Very much a team.
Blimey, you have to watch these mild-mannered types. It'll probably turn out that the situation in Kosovo is caused by Mavis Riley.
A remark made by Norma Major to Baroness Blatch a week before the 1997 election was overheard by a Labour Party press officer. According to a book by the Labour spin doctor Philip Gould, it was this that sank Conservative hopes for a fifth term, and not, as the rest of us had thought, splits over Europe, the exchange rate collapse, recessions, Michael Portillo, the poll tax, unemployment, Maastricht sleaze, and the fact that everybody hated their guts. Gould's book describes Labour's campaign in great detail. Early on, he left the entire election strategy documents in the Burger King at Euston Station. They were returned as soon as the staff were able to distinguish them from their own king-size whoppers. 2 points to Roy Just. Alan, listen to this. Which lady is for turning to the church?
Yes. She doesn't like single mothers. I don't know why Thatcher got in on it. She had a busy little week, hasn't she? She's having a comeback. And she wants them to go somewhere where they can be brought up to respect traditional values, like Chile. She actually wants them to be taken in by the Salvation Army and to leave their little bundles on the steps of workhouses and things like that. It's really rather touching.
Only thing is, though, I don't think the Salvation Army wants single mothers. I think they want jumble.
It's the uniform, you know. It's Pinochet's uniform, it's the Salvation Army's uniform.
So Cecil Parkinson used to put on his Home Guard outfit, did he?
How did you know about that?
If he'd had a Home Guard outfit, he wouldn't have gotten the trouble he did.
During a speech in America, Baroness Thatcher said she believes single mothers should be cared for by religious groups. In a rare, unique moment of contrition, she blamed her own government for allowing pregnant women to jump the queue for council flats, even before she found out if they voted Tory. And the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And we start round two with a clipping from the Decorum Independent.
The Mayor of Berkhamsted, Councillor John Brooks, was invited to open the new sewage plant, which was built in the spring this year. Smiling bravely, he said, "It's a funny job being mayor. Yesterday, I was accepting two new benches by the canal. Today, it's stools."
Well, thanks to Tom Funnell of Hemel Hempstead for that. Second round, and Linda, which bit of bacon ended up with egg on his face after making a Charlie of himself?
Oh, it's this little lad, Richard Bacon, from Blue Peter. He'd been taking drugs, and they had to sack the poor lad. And they made an announcement before the show explaining that he'd been sacked for taking illegal drugs. How parents of small children explain that to them, I don't know. Well, he had some tixie licks, and he didn't really have the sniffles. Poor little lad.
And they've had to pulp the annual, the Blue Peter annual.
Well, because he's all over that, I suppose, yeah. Isn't he?
Well, he's torn bits out of it, but
it just shows how things deteriorated. You know, I'm a children's hour man myself, and you can't imagine Uncle Mac on heroin, can you? Or Auntie Doris, done for soliciting.
Skin up with mother.
This isn't the first time BBC children's programmes have been associated with scandal. Bill and Ben frequently relied on a little weed. Andy Pandy and Luby Lou were always leaping into the basket together, and Noggin the Nog is still illegal in 37 states. 2 points to Linda. Clive, if there is still a glass ceiling, why is it more likely to be fixed by a man?
A glass ceiling, this could either literally mean that there are window cleaners who have to be men, or women aren't being advanced in employment in companies, or it could be any one of another 25 stories this week, which I haven't read. And,
typical man.
Yeah.
Let me answer all the questions, why don't you?
Yeah.
It's some survey that comes up with the amazing revelation that women do everything and men are a bit rubbish. Well, knock me down with a big lorry.
You're absolutely right. It was a survey conducted by the Equal Opportunities Commission, which showed that despite gains made by feminism, it appears women still spend far more time than men cooking and cleaning. For example, most men interviewed thought that Toilet Duck was the name of George Michael's latest single. So I'll give 2 points to that side and 1 point to Roy for getting the answer right. and because I'm completely unfair. Roy, your question, listen to this. I was lost in France, in the street, a band was playing, and the crowd all danced, couldn't catch what they were saying. Roy, who denied he'd bowled a maiden over?
Well, this is a story about the second greatest living Yorkshireman. Modesty prevents me from saying who the first greatest living Yorkshireman is. Geoffrey Boycott, who went to France last week with a whole touring party, 15 in all, to convince the judge at Grasse that he had not struck that young lady in the face. And he'd made an official complaint. He found it extremely difficult to deal with the French court because they spoke French throughout.
The extraordinary thing was that the women he took with him, as I read it, had all fallen on their face at some time, and they had photographs of this. They're very strange circles he mixes in, isn't there? Why were they always falling on their face in Geoffrey's company? And why do they then have pictures taken?
Well, I don't think they did in Geoffrey's company. All over the country, people have been writing to Geoffrey, saying, "Dear Geoffrey, you have been cruelly treated. Women fall on their faces all the time, and I've done it, and if you want me to come and prove I've done it, I'll turn up and be a face faller just to convince them of your innocence."
What a lucky coincidence that Max Clifford turned up to help him with his
All these women have fallen on their face because they've listened to Geoffrey Boycott telling them how he made 100 against the Australians in 1967, and they just rock off to sleep and go, poof.
The French judge thought shredded wheat was the name of a cricket commentator, but everybody else knows it's what the other commentators refer to as Richie Beno's hair. 2 points to Roy. Alan, who really, really wants to spread goodwill?
Oh, this is Diplomat Spice, isn't it? It's Jerry Halliwell. I don't know how she got this job. It used to be said that an ambassador was someone who went abroad to lie for their country, and this may well be true in her case, I guess. But she's dissociated herself now from the other four and gone off to be a major international figure. And show a lot of it too, if I'm any judge.
Pavarotti, he's a UN ambassador as well.
Is he? Where to?
Well, hopefully nowhere where there's famine. That would be a cruel joke, wouldn't it? Really? Unless they're sending him as a bouncy castle to cheer things up a bit.
And the scores at the end of round two are Linda and Clive 8, but thanks to my unfair scoring system, Alan and Roy in the lead with 9 points. And we start round three with a clipping from the Acton Gazette.
During the Second World War, Mr. Connolly joined the Royal Air Force and served alongside Sir Douglas Bader, the flying leg end.
Thanks to David Bates of West London for that. Linda, which bruiser was given a sympathetic ear?
Oh, you're writing it and saying it. That kind of negates writing it if you say it as well, doesn't it, really?
I'll draw him now.
Draw him then. Yeah.
It says Tyson.
It does. Oh, you can read it from there.
Oh, Mike Tyson.
He's a boxer. He bit off somebody's ear at Evander Holyfield.
Now I know now.
And now he's been allowed
back.
His licence back, as long as he spits it out. Now, if you just say the... if you say that answer, you'll be guaranteed 2 points and one to Roy.
OK, then. Mike Tyson, going to be allowed back in the ring again. Yes. Lots of people testified in his defence, including Evander Holyfield, who wouldn't hear a word against him.
The former world champion, who once served 18 months in jail on a rape charge, has been working on his image. The promotion of his more feminine side has earned him the new nickname, Ironing Mike Tyson. Clive, listen to this music. Some people, they tease one another, take pride in themselves, keeping the other one down. Well, I'm not like that at all. Clive, who isn't talking anymore to Chris Evans?
Well, this I'm very much against. Apparently, Cliff Richard had the temerity to be rude to Chris Evans on Chris Evans' own television programme, and I don't hold with that at all, I think. Or at least they apparently did quite a sort of blandish kind of interview, but Chris Evans then started being rude about Cliff Richard afterwards, which is not really fair. But because Chris Evans is, I think he's a very powerful man now, he's able to ban Cliff Richard from ever being heard on the radio ever again. as a punishment. And Cliff Richard has some very, very strong admirers, people who have been with him since he was 16 and they're now the same age as he is, which is 90, but he still looks 16. And they're whipping up a protest that why can't his records be played on either Virgin... if he can't be played on Virgin Radio, who can? And I prefer the Bee Gees myself.
The odd thing was that Cliff Richard got himself back onto the airways by remastering a record he'd done, taking his name off it, and putting it out under the pseudonym Black Knight.
Yes.
Did he know that's a leading condom?
2 points to Clive. Roy, where was Taking the Mickey a hot topic?
There was a Mars bar, I think, that proprietary advertising, so I'll say it again.
There was a chocolate bar
of a well-known variety, and a lady bit into it and found there was a mouse inside, which for some extraordinary reason she took exception to.
Wasn't an entire mouse.
Only part of
it. It was a head and shoulders. At least that's all there was after she'd finished it. It was very strange. She'd eaten after it.
Was there a head and shoulders before she ate it or after she'd ate it?
You mean, are the feet and the bum somewhere else? I don't know. I have no idea.
My dog called Buster, whose book is now in the bestsellers list, would have enjoyed a Mars bar with a mouse inside much more than he would have enjoyed a Mars bar without a mouse inside.
It's the most convoluted plug I've ever heard you say.
I thought it was a good try myself, but I know I won't get away with it.
There's a rumour going around that you're nicking his royalties, you know, is that true?
He can't keep his royalties because his fame was dependent on him killing a goose, and as Lord Wakeham says, you can't profit from any crime, so he can't keep the royalties. I have to have them. It's very, very depressing.
Yes, it was the case of Marie Henriques, who claimed she found a mouse in a chocolate bar purchased at a London Underground kiosk. She says this has not only put her off topics for life, but she doesn't dare to buy a lion bar for fear of what she might find in that. Alan, whose letter from Lawyers Are Us could prove catastrophic?
Oh, it's a very sad story. Those illiterates that have that toy shop, which is Toys Are Us with the R backwards, have taken to task a woman who set up a charity called Cats Are Us. And they said, you can't spell it with the R backwards, you've got to spell it A-R-E.
I must say, Cats R Us provides a wonderful opportunity to talk about a dog.
Shut up! I had a friend who worked for the NSPCC, and someone came up to her at the Conservative Party stall that she was running there for the NSPCC and said, I do so agree with what you're doing. I believe that people who are cruel to cats should all be hanged.
I was just wondering how risky it was running an animal shelter at a Tory party meeting. I mean, we keep having these Portillo's and things dumped on you. Wouldn't say, would you look after it? I found it wandering along the M4, foaming.
Marion Machell, whose tiny rescue shelter in Durham, Cats R Us, has been served with an injunction by Toys R Us lawyers to cease trading within 14 days. Mrs. Machell complained that the company were behaving like a bunch of gangsters. This was confirmed on Thursday when she woke up to find the severed head of a My Little Pony in her bed. The scores at the end of round three are Linda and Clive 12, but Alan and Roy still in the lead with 13 points. And as we approach the final round, here's a clipping from the Plymouth Evening Herald.
Traders in the Barbican say the area will always have a lively nightlife. However, a Channel 4 documentary has portrayed the area as a haunt of drunkards who fall over in the street and urinate in alleyways during the wee hours.
Thanks to Claire Bradley of Plymouth for that. Linda, listen to this. Oh, no, you just can't win. There's no sense in suffering as the rocks tumble and the earth slides too. This means it's curtains for you. A song called Curtains for You by The Only Ones. Linda, who gave a measured response to hanging?
Oh, the curtain lady from Bristol. There's this woman in Bristol, and she had some curtains, and they were a bit too long. So she thought, I won't mess about with them myself and spoil them. I'll take them to a specialist shop. And so she took them there and said, oh, I'd like these curtains reduced to 92 inches, please. Only they thought she meant centimetres. Oh, a lot of ladies going, oh, what a nightmare. The whole scheme in the room was ruined. So she thought that she'd end up with, you know, the curtains and like one cushion, and she's ended up with 500 cushions and a pelmet, basically.
And how did this get into the papers? Was that sufficient to get into the newspapers? woman has curtains.
You
no.
stitched
wrong.
I can tell you exactly why. It's because her name was Patricia Hodge, and they thought it was the actress.
Oh, right.
And they rang her in Bristol, and it wasn't.
But they printed it anyway.
Printed it anyway, of course.
Global economic collapse.
Bad yes. day.
Millions dead in Kosovo. Short curtains horror. Mrs. Hodge said it was the worst reaction to a curtain going up since Andrew Lloyd Webber's whistle down the wind open in the West End. Two-point cylinder Clive, which TV inquisitor received a very bad reception.
This is Jeremy Paxman, who went off to Hindlesham Hall, a rather attractive sort of mansion in Suffolk somewhere, which lovely rooms and restaurant. But, of course, being Jeremy Paxman, he had to go and pick a fight with everybody about everything. And, you know, the painting in the room wasn't right and the food was slightly cold or slightly not quite right. So he wrote it all up as, you know, my by night of hell, this compared to my days reporting on the situation in Northern Ireland. And, you know, the woman on reception wouldn't give me my money back when I cancelled and things like that. And it's just an amusing piece for him. But, of course, the poor girl behind the reception has been in tears ever since.
Well, there was this letter in the room saying, you're welcome, the accommodation is complimentary, yours, yeah. John and Wendy, he said. Mm. But it turned out later that John and Wendy were a couple who were getting married on the same day, and they'd made a mistake.
And so Jeremy Paxman thought all married couples, you know, like to, it's good luck to meet a sweep, it's good luck to give a free hotel room to a television presenter.
Do you take this man? Come on, stop messing around. Do you take him? Guess who witnessed... Guess who witnessed the incident said that after 15 minutes of intense questioning, the receptionist finally admitted her role in the arms to Iraq scandal. Two points to Clive. Roy, which islanders were completely sealed off for 3 weeks? Alan, which islanders were completely sealed off for 3 weeks?
There were angry seals that just... attack people in boats leaving these. It's a Hebridean thing, isn't it?
She was looking after her pups, wasn't she? And didn't let the islanders get near her.
But the pups were not dogs. They
no.
Not the sort of dogs that write books.
No. No, they were cut off from the rest of the world for not a very long time. They couldn't even get their curtains fixed.
If I made a seal noise, would we get an extra point?
No, of course not.
It can't have been worth the humiliation to do that.
They all laughed until you did that.
Is that why? In many years to come, when you finally die, Roy, instead of being written up as, you know, deputy leader of the Labour Party passes away, it's seal noise man goes.
Well, are there any other imitation you'd like me to do? I was known as the Percy Edwards of the Parliamentary Labour Party.
Do you do only animals, or can you do some Michael Foot, things like that?
I can do Michael Foot, but I'm not going to tonight, because as Alan says, there's a level of humiliation to which I'm not prepared to go.
Well, at least we've found it. Alan, which 40-somethings have said goodnight, sweetheart, to their old home?
Goodnight, sweetheart.
Daily Telegraph, page 11, if memory serves.
It doesn't serve me, I'll tell you.
Goodnight, sweetheart. I mean, it's a wartime thing?
Yes, ish. Well, Linda, do you know?
Yeah, it's a couple who've lived in a house which has been kept the way
it
was in the 1940s.
Story. That was a feature.
It was a story. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, I shouldn't be answering this. Apparently it's a feature.
It was a story.
It's not a news story, right, because there was no problem with their curtains. So
no, just pictures of a gas stove and...
They're people who lived in a house...
Boxes of Rennies and things.
Decorated and exactly as it was in the 1940s. And as you quite right, it had a gas stove and every now and then a German bomb would fall on it. And now they're leaving it.
But there was a news story because they've actually moved into a house that had been untouched since the 40s. Having
Goodness.
Been 40s obsessed themselves.
Wow. Hold page 11, Michael.
40s obsessed couple Glenn and Melanie Sanderson this week moved into a house which has been left untouched for 50 years, including the portrait of Cliff Richard in the attic. Mr. and Mrs. Sanderson claim that living in the 1940s has several advantages. There's very little crime, you can trust your friendly neighbourhood Bobby, and nobody's tried to mess up the home service. So 2 points to Clive, but one to Alan. And before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
Thanks to M. Coleman from Banbury for this one. It's from The Guardian. Birds tagged in America by the Washington Biological Survey used to wear metal tags that bore the inscription, "Wash, Bile, Serve." But according to New Scientist, the survey team recently received a letter from a camper in Arkansas. "Dear sirs, while camping last week, I shot one of your birds. I think it was a crow. I followed the cooking instructions on the leg tag, and I want to tell you it was horrible."
Clive.
Well, this has been sent in by S. Heward from Bath. It's from The Independent. I can't quite follow exactly what it's about, but it's some sort of award ceremony for people who are stupid. And it concludes with, "Among those earning a commendation because their stupidity did not cause death is a Mexican attorney who claimed his mobile phone became lodged up his rectum because it was left in the shower by his dog and he fell upon it." Dr. Dennis Cole, who removed it, praised the man's courage. "Three times during the extraction, his phone rang, and each time he made jokes about it that had us just rolling on the floor. By the time we finished, we really expected to find an answering machine up there."
Roy. I'm grateful to Roger Worsley of Haverford West for sending this cutting from The New Scientist. "British sperm donors have paid between 10 and 20 plus pounds and expenses. Payment is absolutely essential to maintaining a supply of sperm donors," claims psychologist Susan Gollenbock. "If they were not paid, they would dry up."
Alan.
I see we have to attribute our sources this week, so I've been sent this in from a Senator Pinochet who spotted it in the Brighton Argus. "Shoreham pensioner John Broadbent has abandoned his plan to parachute onto the North Pole to celebrate his 70th birthday. The former RAF officer told us, 'I suddenly got cold feet.'"
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Alan and Roy with an excellent 16, but Linda and Clive are last-minute winners with 18 points. And we leave you with a tragic item seen in The Guardian by Michael Turland of Sleaford.
"The journey was doomed the moment the Pallas Warbler took off into a Siberian sky and headed west instead of east. Dubbed the Drool of the Autumn by conservationists and transpired beauty and rarity, it braved Scandinavia's icy winds and storms, was convinced Asia was on the horizon, until it smashed into the headquarters of English Nature and died."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Horan, Linda Smith, Roy Hattersley and Clive Anderson. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was John Rolfe.